All right, we're starting. We're still at near the end of chapter 23, 24. This is Monday, February 8th. We're in the middle, near the end, chapter 23, chapter 24. We're looking at fatty acids, ketone bodies, so on. So what happens is that poorly controlled insulin will create a situation where if you come up to a diabetic that's unconscious, you can sometimes smell something sweet on their breath, and that's actually acetone, that's being generated by the breakdown of excessive levels of acetoacetate, and you can smell it on their breath as they get close. You smell, they have a sweet breath, and they're very, very sick, probably unconscious. If you can smell acetone on their breath, they feel horrible if they're conscious, and they're near death if they're not. So it's a real, real problem to be careful of. That you've got to be careful with that, especially... Anybody here a diabetic? In here, diabetic? Okay. It's not that common. At any rate, I met one of my former advisees who's actually... homozygous for sickle cell anemia. I saw him Friday night at a thing down there in the Commons. It was a good thing to see him. We're looking at the biosynthesis of the separation of synthesis and breakdown of fatty acids. The mitochondria is where it's broken down, and cytosol is where it's synthesized. And we're going to take a look now at the first step. The initial reaction for biosynthesis of fatty acids begins with malonyl-CoA. It's produced by the addition of bicarbonate to acetyl-CoA using an enzyme called acetyl-CoA carboxylase. This enzyme uses biotin to hold a bicarbonate intermediate. So you've got this biotinyl enzyme. There's a biotin, there's a bicarbonate. It holds on to the bicarbonate. The biotin does. Acetyl-CoA comes in, and it makes this three-carbon CoA called malonyl-CoA. So this is a nice high-energy compound. Because you can tell that the connection of the carbon dioxide or carbonate to the biotin is energy requiring. Does that say ATP and this says ATP plus PI? Do you think that's correct? I don't think so either. That should be an ATP, ADP. The acetyl-CoA carboxylase is regulated by phosphorylation. Upon phosphorylation, that's this enzyme. The enzyme is inactivated. Phosphorylation is accomplished by cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase. What's another name for a cyclic? Put a little capital. Hold on here. Put a little C here. This is supposed to be a cap C, cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase. What's another name for cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase? Protein kinase A, that's exactly correct. Glucagon, epinephrine, pyrenopa phosphorylation, normally cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase hormones, perhaps by inhibiting, all right, inhibiting what? I don't know. What's it say here on the other page? Inhibiting dephosphorylation. Insulin stimulates dephosphorylation, which activates the acetyl-CoA carboxylase. Now, so let's think of the metabolic logic here. Insulin is the pancreas's response to high levels of energy in the blood. So when you go and, you know, on Sunday morning, you go to Apple Valley and buy a dozen pastries and eat all of them for breakfast, you're going to have a little extra energy in your bloodstream pretty quickly. And so the insulin response goes up. It responds by going up. And that insulin level indicates that the blood has plenty of energy, and therefore muscles, tissues are supposed to extract it out of there. Liver gets into it, muscle tissue, adipose tissue. But what the biochemistry of it is that the insulin stimulates that dephosphorylation of this particular enzyme, which through a cascade that I'm not going to talk about, but by activating that enzyme, it stimulates fat biosynthesis. So stimulates dephosphorylation, which activates acetyl-CoA carboxylase. This is the first step of fat biosynthesis. Production of a palmitic acid. I'm just using palmitate as a model. There's all the different fatty acids are produced. involves seven enzymes. This is an interesting enzyme. This is an interesting thing that's going on here. The biochemistry of this is interesting. Involves seven enzyme activities on a single protein chain. So you've got seven separate enzyme activities on a single chain, single primary sequence. Active synthetic protein is a dimer of two protein chains. The growing fatty acid is anchored by an acyl carrier protein. So what I've seen the model of this is, and it's not obvious, I've seen kind of a model that looks like this. This is this, let's see here. I think it's this thing. Yeah. Beta-keto-ACP synthase. Beta-keto-acyl. That enzyme is actually a dimer. And the ACP stands for what? Everybody remember what that was? Acyl carrier protein, that's correct. And what happens is there's basically a protein tether, a protein tether. Some sort of protein tether that the growing fatty acid's on, the growing fatty acid here is on the end of it. And the protein tether of one of the dimers holds the growing fatty acid and the other dimer's activities act on it. Does that make sense? It would be like if I had a broken arm and you had a broken arm, we'd feed each other. Right? If we were a dimer. Remember seeing pictures of that? Where there was a... In hell, there was a huge feast, but everybody down there had two broken arms that are in splints, and they were all starving to death. But in heaven, they had the same situation where a big feast, long table, everybody had two broken arms, but everybody was really very happy and fat. Because they were feeding each other. Does that make sense? Yeah. Never mind. You'd have to be there to see it. But be that as it may, this protein tether on one dimer is actually where actually utilizes the enzyme activities on the other dimer to grow this. So that's why they say what they say right here. I put it. Yeah, the growing fatty acid chain is anchored by an acyl carrier protein on the other dimer. And so here's the end. Here's the thing. Here's this. Once you make the malonyl-CoA, you then move it from malonyl-CoA to malonyl-ACP. Then you have the acetyl-CoA, which gets made to an acetyl-ACP, and then they come together, eject a carbon dioxide. Notice the one that was on the malonyl-CoA. That provides the energy to put these two things together. And you then get this acetyl-acetyl ACP. So you get four carbons in a row. Then you do a reverse of beta oxidation. Notice what you do. What do you do with that reverse beta oxidation? You got that carbonyl group right there. What's the first thing you do to it? You make it from a carbonyl, you make it into a hydroxy. How do they do that? By reducing it by what? Na what? NAD. 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 pH. There you go. That's right. And where do we get NAD pH from? PPP, which stands for what? Pentose phosphate pathway. Or if you're an old dude, if you want... You get into a class and someone asks that in graduate school, raise your hand really high and say, hexose monophosphate shunt. Hexose monophosphate shunt. And then I'll look at you and go, how old are you? Who taught you that?
My old biochem professor. He learned it in college.
I guess so. I haven't heard that used in years. Hexose monophosphate shunt. Any rate. So, you got the ketone, you reduce to an alcohol, then what do? If you're doing the opposite of beta oxidation, then what do? You dehydrate it to make it a what? Double bond. Then what do? You reduce it again with what? NADPH. And there you got the long chain fatty acid. Guess what happens? This goes back to number two, and you do it 2 to 6 more times, and you end up having 8 carbons in a row, and finally there's some thioesterase that says, enough is enough, cuts it off, and you got your palmitic acid. Exact opposite of beta oxidation. Then you have enzymes that come in and remove different, you know, to make it unsaturated. So you're always making saturated fats. You know, you would not be a very healthy meat to eat, by the way. You're very unhealthy. You would not be a desirable meat. You're basically, what's an undesirable meat that people eat? You're basically the pig's feet of food. What? The end cut. That's right. It's the stuff that they strip off the bones to make it into hot dogs for. Yeah. If you want to eat really, really bad meat, just go ahead and eat a pork or a mixed meat hot dog. I one time saw the ingredients of it, and there have, in a 1,000-pound batch of hot dogs, beef and pork hot dogs, there was 150 pounds of cow udder. That's why if you're going to eat a hot dog, the only hot dog to eat, of course, is a kosher hot dog. Okay? Kosher. Best meat out there if you're going to eat meat. Okay. So I'll let you go through here. I want you to figure out exactly how much energy all this costs. So the overall stoichiometry, the reason why that's blank is not because of my stare, which, of course, is a blank stare. But I want you to sit down and calculate using, assuming NADPH has the same ATP equivalence as NADH, which it does, I want you to figure out how much energy it takes to synthesize palmitic acid and how much it takes to synthesize palm, amylenyl synthesis and stuff. And so the overall stoichiometry of creating one of the palmitics, including all the energy necessary to make malonyl-CoA, that's what the overall stoichiometry is. Physically, association of dimer subunits. Sectionally, the ACP of one subunit holds the growing fatty acid chain for the other subunit. Modification of fatty acids. Are there fatty acids longer than 16? Absolutely, there are. You can get 18s and 20s and 22s. Pretty easily. You need to get a 20 at least, because that's arachidonic acid, which is the building block for prostaglandins. And how many of you understand the nature of prostaglandins? We haven't gone over the word in detail, but it's one of the hormone signals in inflammation and pain. And of course, aspirin inhibits prostaglandin production. That's one of the things it does do. Okay, so if you're going to make it longer, the ER will do successive condensations of the azole-CoA with more malonyl-CoA, and mitochondria that'll do a reverse of beta oxidation, interestingly enough. And then you can make unsaturated fatty acids. These long-chain fatty acids have to be unsaturated because as saturated, if they were continue to be saturated, they'd be solid at your body temperature, solid at 37 degrees Celsius, which would be almost impossible to manage. Okay, if you can imagine feeling along the side here, you'd run into a hard lump where your fat would have congealed if it's not unsaturated. Yes, yum. That's good eating. All right. Again, why don't cannibals like to eat clowns? They taste funny. At any rate, sorry, bad joke, but it fit. Okay, now, unsaturated, what this means is there are some delta 9, delta 6, delta 5, delta 4, delta dawn, fatty acyl-CoA desaturases. That means that this delta turns out to be not from the carbonyl end, but from the terminal end. And so this means it's going to put a double bond at 9 or at 6 or at 5 or at 4. And all the different saturations there that you get. I can't answer this. I'm sorry. Okay. Any rate, I'll get it later. So you can make all the different unsaturated fats that you want using these desaturases that exist in the cytosol and so on. And so they simply make double bonds there. In the above enzymes, greater than 5 and CH2 can contain double bonds. CH2 is always saturated. New double bonds are always 3 carbons closer to the CoA group, but never closer than 9 away. Thus, linolenic acid cannot be synthesized by animals. In other words, that using the rules here, linoleic acid is a precursor to prostaglandins, thus is an essential fatty acid. You actually have, oddly enough, despite its demagoguery, you need fat. Okay? If you lived a fatless diet, you'd eventually have a nutritional disease. Now, linoleic acid is so ubiquitous, and the word ubiquitous means what? All present. That if you're eating it all, you're getting linoleic acid. Okay, so they've never found a nutritional disease with that, but nevertheless, they have discovered it is a essential fatty acid. Regulation of fatty acid metabolism. Here's the heart of it, ladies and gentlemen. It's actually fairly straightforward and simple, at least at this level. It really begins with this acetyl-CoA carboxylase. Now, again, what does that acetyl-CoA carboxylase do? Well, it takes acetyl-CoA and makes malonyl-CoA. And what do you do with malonyl-CoA? Well, you make fat out of it. Yes, okay. All right, got it. So we're focusing on acetyl-CoA. Notice it's inhibited by cyclic AMP-dependent phosphorylation, activated by insulin-dependent dephosphorylation. So the presence of insulin turns on that acetyl-CoA carboxylase, which makes high levels of malonyl-CoA, which inspires palmitic acid to be made, which then goes on and you can combine it to make other kinds of fatty acids in the smoother ER, which eventually make fat, which is dumped into the bloodstream via VLDLs, notice that's endogenous because you're making it here in the liver cell, endogenous, and that eventually goes to the adipocyte, which is the fancy name for the fat cell, and it's picked up there, brought in as free fatty acids, reformed as triacylglycerols, and stored there in little oil droplets inside the adipocyte. Now, oddly enough, there's a few feedback mechanisms here that help control both the oxidation and production. High levels of a malonyl-CoA will come in here and block the import of fatty acyl-CoA into the mitochondria to reduce the amount of beta oxidation. So if you're synthesizing it, you don't need to oxidize it. So that's why they're doing that. Palmitic acid then is a feedback inhibitor of acetyl-CoA. So high levels of palmitic acid slow down this process so that there is some level of regulation. The regulation, of course, is much more sophisticated and involved than what this is, but this is a good first iteration, and it focuses primarily on acetyl-CoA carboxylase. Acetyl-CoA carboxylase. And then let me do one more thing down here at the bottom. It's this thing right here. There's a... I can't even read what that says. What does that say? hormone sensitive, is that right? Yeah, hormone sensitive lipase, in other words, a variety of hormones, not just insulin, can break down. This is activated by the cyclic AMP dependent phosphorylation and free fatty acids and get dumped in there, at least in the adipose tissue. You see, so the crucial idea that you need to keep in mind is that cyclic AMP dependent protein kinases, the protein kinase A, you know, has the same process in all the cells. In other words, that you phosphorylate something, in other words, that the cyclic AMP levels go up and you phosphorylate something. But you see, if you do that in a fat cell, that phosphorylation may have a completely different overall effect than if the cyclic AMP-dependent phosphorylation is occurring in the liver cell. So you have to be aware of the cell type when you talk about the metabolic behavior of these phosphorylations and so on. All right, enough of that. Glucagon, epinephrine, adipose tissue. So we're now looking at adipose tissue. The enzyme hormone-sensitive lipase is activated by cyclic AMP protein phosphorylation system, which means it's turned on by glucagon, and epinephrine stimulates lipolysis, raising the blood fatty acid levels, which is what you would think would happen with high levels of glucagon and high levels of epinephrine. Now, glucagon is a measure of the food of your fuel storage over, shall we say, a longer term in your blood. But epinephrine, of course, is a fancy name, is the British and now ubiquitous name for what common name? What? Adrenaline. That's correct. Adrenaline. So adrenaline was the American name, but epinephrine was the British name. But finally, over in the United States, we've started using epinephrine much more commonly. But epinephrine and adrenaline are identical in every respect. Exactly the same compound, exactly the same effect, just two different names for the same thing. So if you're under high level of stress, for you right now, you look like you're at a very high level of stress. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, you know, it's just you can barely keep your head up and... Anyway, but that's not the case all the time. But sometimes middle-aged guys like me get jobs in which they're responsible for a lot of stuff they can't control. And notice I said responsible for stuff they can't control, other people and stuff. And they end up getting a lot of stress. And stress releases... This stimulates what? Which raises what? And which does what? Clogs your arteries, and they keel over. So you got to be careful. Now then, leads to production of ketone bodies in the liver. Acetyl-CoA carboxylase is inhibited, and general fatty acid oxidation is stimulated. Fatty acid synthesis is inhibited. When there's high levels of glucagon and epinephrine, insulin has opposite effect, stimulates glycogen and triglycerol synthesis, reduces cyclic AMP levels in all the cells, activates the carboxylase. Glucagon-insulin ratio determines fatty acid metabolism. Cholesterol synthesis. Cholesterol synthesis begins with what small compound? Beginning reactant is in the pathway is what? HMG-CoA, which is itself synthesized where? Ketone bodies. Remember that? Remember if you returned back to days of yore, wherever yore is, I mentioned that earlier. About that kind of thing? All right, so acetate. So this is basically cholesterol is built up from two carbon units of acetate. You can identify where the acetates come from in this diagram. I'm not going to ask you to know this. This, if you would eventually, if you went into cholesterol metabolism as a research project in your PhD, in your pharmacology MA, PhD, or other things. You might want to memorize this, but it's beyond the necessity of this particular level of class. Here's this HMG-CoA. HMG-CoA then binds, gets reduced. HMG-CoA reductase gets reduced by, look, we're synthesizing something. Therefore, what are we using? Yes. Reduce it. we get this Melvin, and then we add, we give it a little high energy boost. And then what else happens here? We get, and we add more ATP, 5-pyromethylmevalonate. And you get this intermediate called isopentanyl pyrophosphate. Isopentanyl pyrophosphate. And that's the that is the 4-carbon high energy next level of intermediate. So you go from acetyl-CoA to isopentanyl pyrophosphate, and let's see here. I wish I didn't get into much detail. Oh, yeah, here we go. Let's take a look at this. So you modify isopentanyl. Do you see page 14? Do you have a page 14? I'm going to skip. It doesn't have it? It's just, it's all messed up. Okay. Yeah, mine got shifted somehow. Sorry. I was wondering where it went to. This is a variation of this isopentanyl pyrophosphate. And so you have, this is a 4-carbon unit, this is a 4-carbon unit. That comes together, head to tail, and you get this geranyl pyrophosphate. Then you get this farnesyl. So, geranyl and farnesyl. Okay. So, geranyl, farnesyl, pyrophosphate, and finally you get something known as squalene. Say squalene. Squalene. Say this. This is farnesyl. Say farnesyl. Farnesyl. Say this, geranyl. Geranyl. Yes, exactly right. Now, am I going to ask you to memorize those structures? No. However, I want you to be able to identify that squalene, farnesyl, geranyl, and isopentanyl phosphate are intermediates in cholesterol biosynthetic pathway. That's all. Just squalene. Oh, yeah. When you hear squalene, think cholesterol. Okay. Okay, now squalene. Look at squalene. You see squalene? See this thing right here? Look at that. I mean, how many carbons is this? They're all non-conjugated and everything. But what happens is, and if you look back on the top of that previous page, or the same page, it's... you go here, and you end up looking at this. Look at this. Squalene is eventually synthesized in condensation of 6 isoprene units, and you can redraw squalene in this this form. And you go, now, wait a minute. Since I'm drawing it like this, you know, if we close some of those loops, bingo, I've got a steroid backbone. And this is exactly what happens. Here's squalene with a double bond down here and a variety of them, combining directly with oxygen under the influence of an enzyme called squalene epoxidase. What's an epoxide? Do you remember what an epoxide is? Yeah, a little triangle with an oxygen. It's a very high energy, unstable oxygen compound. You get this 2,3-oxidosqualene. And then another enzyme comes along and initiates the break of that squalene and directs the reformation of all those electrons in a single step. Look at this. So here this enzyme comes in, breaks that high energy double bond, and suddenly there's a cascade of electron shifts that form new bonds. This pair comes over here, this pair comes over here, this pair comes over here, this pair comes down there. And so you got a new bond here, 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 and here. And you end up in a single step moving from squalene to lanosterol. Say lanosterol. Lanosterol. Which is the initial foundational ring structure for all the steroids. This is the grandfather or great-grandfather of all the steroids here. Is this lanosterol. And it comes in a single step from ring formation, multi-ring formation from that, 2,3-oxidosqualene? Funny story. Now, again, my chemist friend in Lincoln, Nebraska, who should know better, was worried about her cholesterol levels, and so she began to take, wait for it, shark squalene. And I said, shark squalene? Yes, I'm taking shark squalene. To do what? Lower my cholesterol level. And I go, you know, that's an interesting idea. And so I gave her a biochemistry book and said, you know, do me a favor and look up the production of cholesterol. Okay, and see if you notice anything in there. And so she reads through it, and a couple weeks later she comes back, well, I stopped taking squalene. Because why would you take a precursor in two steps to make all the cholesterol you want? Now, admittedly, high levels of squalene may shut down some enzymes. High levels of squalene may shut down HMG-CoA reductase. So what? You've got the squalene in your body. And I don't know what shark squalene means. What does that mean, shark squalene? Is it squalene? Is it... Yeah, it's supposed to be from sharks. They isolated from sharks. They paid a lot of money for shark squalene.
It might be different from the squalene used in the human body.
Yeah, and your point then is what? Now, yeah, eventually it turns into cholesterol. Either that or gets tinkled out as some sort of byproduct or whatever. I mean, please. Yeah, look it up for me. Shark squalene. It may be structurally different, and there may be some real clinical trials, but so many of these food additives don't have to go through clinical trials before they can make any kind of claim they want. Remember, we talked about that carnitine, how it's a fat burner. You can claim it's a fat burner all you want as a food additive, but notice they will always at the bottom say, this product will not ameliorate any known symptoms or is not claimed to heal any diseases. It can only be a food product. HMG-CoA reductase is a control site for cholesterol synthesis, long-term feedback controlled by amount of enzyme in the cell. LDL endocytosis influences amount of cholesterol in the cell. HDL is responsible for the return of cholesterol to the liver. Surplus cholesterol is disposed of by release as bile acids. Cholesterol is not metabolized in carbon dioxide and water by any mechanism in humans. Once you get it, all you can do is poop it out. Sorry. That's what that says. So once you make it, you can't do anything about it. So here is this diagram, and I've got to be done with this. But let's review this, and then on Wednesday, we'll finish this up and start amino acids. Amino acids will be pretty quick. I will have your tests done by Wednesday, I guarantee it. Look for it on Tuesday sometime. But I've just got too busy doing other things. I apologize. Have a great day. We'll see you later. And there will be a quiz this week. Okay? There will be a quiz this week starting with this stuff.